Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Listen in as we discuss all things business, growth, and marketing with business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs. And now, here's your host, founder of Roundhouse, the creative agency, Saul Edmonds.
Oh, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast yet again. I am speaking today to Sally Ann Blanchard. Hello. Welcome.
Hello. Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, that's all right. That's my pleasure. It's it's what I do on this podcast. I have guests like you.
That's excellent. Buckle up, baby.
Well, a super exciting start to the podcast with good pauses, a good sense of drama. And now here's Sally Ann to tell you, first of all, before we start getting into the real substance of the podcast, which may go any number of interesting ways, as we were talking about before the podcast, which we said we should have been recording, but it doesn't really matter. I always sort of say at the start, so people who don't actually know you, could you be so kind as to give everyone a little bit of like an overview of who you are and what you get up to, and a short sort of annotated history of how you came to be where you are today.
How long have I got?
Had you? This podcast goes for 10 years.
Okay, so from my dulcet tones, people will recognise that I'm originally from the UK. I've lived in Australia.
Dulcet tones.
I've lived in Australia for 20 years, and it's only when I say years that I realise that I actually am a bit more Australian than UK these days.
Oh, yeah.
My father was in the army. I moved around a lot as a child, and I guess that gave me this innate ability to be open to change. So emigrating at the age of 28 was not really ever a big thing for me, to be coming over to the other side of the world. In terms of professionally, I've worked in the recruitment space, the coaching space. I've always had a bit of a sales bent to my career. And most recently, I've been living in Brisbane for 12 years. I was in Sydney for 8. But most recently, I decided to go back into working for myself. And that was on the back of 2 redundancies post-pandemic. So as a sales director in the leadership space, there's been quite a lot of, economic impact in that area. And instead of working again for another organization, I decided to, you know, point the finger at myself and take charge of my own career again, which I had done when the kids were little. I've got 2 children. And, it was pretty daunting to be on the receiving end of a second redundancy late last year. Then turning that energy then more into away from fear and into opportunity, which is when I decided to work for myself again. And here we are.
And here you are. And so if somebody meets you, like we met at a networking group, like a lot of us do, and so when you first meet people these days, like say as opposed to in the past, is there a different way that you present yourself now? You go, hi, I'm Sally Ann, or I'm Sally, and I am a, you know, what do you say? What's the thing that you feel best describes, like, the heart of what you do?
It's a really interesting question, and I actually struggled with this last year because, you know, I don't want to go out and call myself a coach, though I do coaching. I didn't want to go out and call myself a consultant because there's so many of them and it's such an ambiguous title. But I guess, really, if I want to put it in simple terms, I'm paid to talk to people and with people. So I'm almost, and a very line to the corporate space as well. So I'm almost a corporate chatterbox.
Chatterbox. I love it. It is, though, like I asked that question too, because I think, I reckon if you were to ask like lots of people in business across, you know, even though there's some very obvious things like I'm an electrician or I do this, but at the same time, when people, the more people, expand their offerings, or sometimes I guess it translates to the longer you've been in the business and you're trying something different, I think for a lot of people, it becomes harder to consolidate that down into a sort of a simple thing to say without sounding like you're listing off all the things you do. You go, oh, hi, I'm Saul, and I do this and this and this. And then people are like, yeah, okay, that's fine. But it kind of gets back a little bit to what we were talking about before about connections, that point where you want to go, hi, I'm so-and-so, in a nice, easy way, and be descriptive, but also just not sound like you're listing off a bunch of stuff, right?
You know? I think when we met, I would have probably in simple terms, and I had thought about it, in simple terms, my introduction would be I have three strands to my business. One is coaching people that come out of the defense, as well as those that have been made redundant, having had first experience of that. And I've been coaching for over 20 years, so people are in very safe hands with me there. I have a sales, fractional sales plug-in business, which I can explain a bit more about in a moment. And then I also then speak and facilitate workshops. There is a fourth strand coming to that business, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But yes. the one thing that actually does combine all three of those things is the opportunity and the ability to connect with people, connect with information. So connection is deeply important to me on a personal and professional level.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's – it's funny because I don't really – if I reflect back to like other people that I've met, I don't really remember somebody specifically going, I'm – not that you said I'm a connector, but in that sort of way, which I think is really interesting too, because – whilst it's not on one hand sort of descriptive of, you know, what people want to hear in terms of like, oh, what do you do? Because that's the usual question. It's like, oh, what do you do? Oh, what do you get up to? Whatever. Mm-hmm. It still does kind of answer my question at the start better, which is about like what's at the heart of what you do.
Yeah, which is, I love that. Yeah, I love that question.
Which is in some ways, I don't know whether it's more or less important than the other one, because both are kind of, you know, one's helpful to know because it's like, well, you know, how could you help, you know, someone I know from a practical point of view because you're a coach, but it's like, what's your angle on it? Like, what's your thing? Because, you know, like in a lot of industries, there's, you know, especially when it comes to consultants, like you were saying before, consultants, coaches, there's like stacks of people that do it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and everyone's got, or like a lot of people anyway, they've got their own angle on it. You know, there's sales coaches, there's strategic coaches, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But I think that's, even though it sounds a bit amorphous for me listening to it, it sounds very specific because it's a certain, it says something very specific about you. What do you think that is?
I look at this twofold. We have to look out to our audience. So who am I? What do I do? It depends on where I am and who I'm speaking to. So I have to adapt myself to that audience, right? So if there's nobody interested in career coaching, for example, I wouldn't necessarily bring that up. In the environment that we were in, we were talking with small business owners. So the fractional or plug-in sales director piece was very relevant and it creates a lot of interest. They've heard of it in the finance space, like plug-in CFOs, part-time CFOs. They've heard it a little bit in the marketing space. But how I liken it to a business owner in a story as such is, you know, as businesses scale, they're not necessarily, the owners are not necessarily the best sales directors, but if they're going to hire someone at 70K, they're probably going to get a 70K result. Whereas if they buy blocks of my time, then they will get access to my audience, which is my network, which is my career equity that I've been investing heavily in for 20 years. They get access to that network with whatever it is that they're hoping to introduce to that network. So typically I work in the space of leadership, training, you know, they're the kind of products, if you like, that I'm taking to my audience. Now, more importantly, my network, because again, I'm highly regarded in my industry. I have invested a lot of time in being curious and interested in people and their careers. My network are really happy to hear from me. Hey, what are you up to? What are you doing? And more importantly, they know that I'm out there hustling and listening to what's going on in the world. And almost I become an information gatherer for them. So when we catch up for a coffee and I'm talking about maybe the clients I'm representing or just what's going on in the world, they're actually genuinely interested. Now, if that results in me actually presenting a solution to a client, then happy days, because that's the plug-in sales director piece.
Yeah, that's right. And where do you, because you've done a fair bit of speaking then too, right?
Yeah.
And who have they been generally to and with, like, what sort of, are they industry groups or what sort of groups have you generally been speaking to?
Yeah, I cut my teeth in recruiting accountants.
Right.
Back in 2000 and whatever that was, showing my age. And so I became very well regarded in terms of career advice. And so originally I started working for some of the accounting groups, the industry groups around that, being invited to speak at those kind of events. I then actually had a partnership when I was running my own business where I was doing road shows across the country to those groups.
Oh, yeah.
Like the membership evening nights where you'd have a speaker. That was me. Yeah. Giving out some, you know, highly relevant information. That was me. And then those individuals, they would obviously, you know, they'd take something away from that event. So I did that for a number of years. Then moving more into the small business piece, because I've set up a couple of businesses, I guess I've been able to support an audience with what activities do they need to do to generate revenue. In my heart, I'm a sales director. You can't take the mongrel recruiter out of me, right? I'm the gritty one that likes to go and hustle for business, but I do it in such a way that probably is a bit more elegant. And so I teach people how to almost generate those revenue activities across. And it's basically monkey see, monkey do, right? It's what I've been doing over all of those years. How can I help other people do that? So I've been doing some of those things, whether it's like a small business roadshow, invited to speak on other podcasts, and also like little networking groups that pop up around, you know, around Brisbane particularly. And I like sharing that message. You know, generosity is one of my values. And so I like to be able to share what I can. And then often that's a bit of a hook, right? People then go, oh, that was helpful. And then they get in touch with me. So,
yeah, of course. I mean, that's the way of the world, isn't it? It's like, you know, people, you know, it's all give and take. I mean, kind of everything is, there's, you know, this and that, like the seesaw is like give and take, but you know, it is important to give. Yeah,
one of the things I was really very strategic about, and this is going back to 2008, I set up a coaching business within a recruitment company, and I was very strategic about trying to get media coverage. So I wanted to be featured in various different mediums, whether it was online, blogging, articles. I was fortunate enough to get a couple of TV interviews, a couple of radio interviews, obviously podcasts are more on vogue now. But that media authority, if you like, because I became known, I had then my words published, it almost gives you agency to be an expert in that space. And I'm really proud of that.
Yeah, no, you should be. Yeah, I mean, it is a great thing. It's a great and also a nice thing to be able to obviously share information and have some value for people, right? You know, because people always, you know, in my experience anyway, I'm not sure if it's most or many, but I mean, many people in business are very, you know, hungry for knowing things, like for, you know, new things. Yeah. Probably, you know, just driven by the fact that they've like had to do things themselves over time and problem solve. So that's in their general mindset, right? They're just they're thinking about how to do stuff. So something new and really, yeah, it doesn't have to be like earth-shatteringly, you know, new. It can just be like really helpful reminders, which I mean things that I like in our industry that I often do find really helpful, of things that I kind of already know but I just remind myself of, are like some of the best things. You know, it could be just like, you know, how to do something, or you know how to do something but somebody goes, oh, you could do it like this. It's just like a little bit time saving, or you know, or just from the philosophical point of view.
But how wonderful is it to be able to unlearn some stuff, because we're evolving, but also to be able to learn new stuff from people. I mean, this is again another one of my I guess values or principles, is around curiosity. I'm just, my dad, bless him, would have said I was really nosy I'll take it because I'm actually curious about a lot of things on a professional level.
Yeah.
And that curiosity then makes me interesting to others. But then it's my ability then to say, well, if I've gone out there and I like my clients in all parts of my business to be bold and brave, right? And I'm bold and brave. And so if I want my clients to be bold and brave, I need to show them that I've been bold and brave in the past. And that's that kind of, again, that authority to say, you can do this and let me show you how you can do this. So I've also helped lots of other people get in the media. I've helped lots of other people really sharpen their sales messaging. I've helped lots of other people get new jobs in their coaching. And I guess that comes back to ultimately that connection to me, connection to information, connection to the right people, that whole ripple effect.
Isn't it funny how there's, because you also talk about brand visibility and then like revenue generation too. And I found that like it's, you don't always, depending on who you're listening to, you don't always hear those two things sort of in the same sentence. Not because they either don't make sense, because they obviously do, but like because someone's talking about brand and branding and the importance of your brand, but in that sort of holistic sort of way. But I find it interesting too, because I often find myself when I'm listening to people speak on the podcast, maybe it's because I just because I tend to wander in my general day-to-day thinking, because it sort of helps with my creative work often, is I find myself creating a connection between what you were saying about, you know, people and connection. I was like, it's actually very tightly aligned in a lot of ways with brand and brand visibility, and would perhaps like help you when you're thinking, because you're a people person and you're curious. Therefore, it follows for me when I'm going, oh, here's the connection, is that you being like having a good understanding about the importance of brand visibility relates very closely to that for me, to that. And it's not just like for a personal brand, like it's for, what do you think about that? Like as an idea?
I like the fact that we are discussing brand, because whether you like it or not, you're a walking billboard for whatever you're doing in your personal or professional life. Okay. As we know, social media isn't real. What is real is your authentic self and how you show up. And that authenticity needs to then be backed up with consistency. So,
oh, yes, yes.
You know, if we're going to be showing up, and again, you asked me a bit more about myself. You know, I love to exercise. So, you know, if we talk about it in this sense, you've got to keep showing up in order to keep making the difference, right? And that have that consistency. Well, you then need to lift that recipe and apply it into your business habits, or lift that recipe and apply it into your personal life. I don't think you can fake a brand. You just are who you are. You can reinvent it, but again, you'll need to make sure that you're applying that with authenticity and consistency.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, consistency is kind of, I would argue, is almost at the heart of like many things when it comes to, you know, talking about, you touched on physical things there. It's certainly the case in sport, you know. Mm-hmm. Consistency is also the other side of practice, doing things over and over and over again, doing things consistently until it becomes sort of automatic, until it becomes, and if you're talking about ways of doing things or ways of talking to people or going to events, or, you know, you do it enough times and one, you become better at it, and two, it becomes more of a part of you. Like it turns from just doing it over and over again because you're practicing it, to being like a part of you, right? Like it's like
habitual.
A normal. Yeah, yeah. It's a intrinsic part of you until such time that you actually forget that you ever like had to start practicing it. Like it becomes so sort of natural. I think that kind of two sides of the same coin, really, like those things. But the key is consistent. It's not really, in my mind anyway, it's not really, well, it is obviously doing it enough times, but it's doing it consistently, like regularly. It's not just like in one big spurt and then you don't do it for ages and then you do it again. because it's that, you know, that's one, it forms good habits, obviously, you know, like you were saying, habitual. But I just wanted to touch on something that I found interesting in I listened to the other podcasts you had with Dennis, and you were talking about that you were originally, you went to become a financial planner. Was that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Are you surprised to hear that? Yes, I'm digging up all your dirty secrets.
At 21, I was a mutual company's youngest financial planner. And yeah, I think I probably escaped that industry maybe 3 years later. Yeah. But what that role did give me, because financial planning is all about, you know, I mean, now it's all about highly regulated and very heavily driven around compliance. But back in the day, all those years ago, you know, I was in a position where I was meeting people, I was understanding their financial position, I could fact find, I was having conversations about what their aspirations and goals were, and I was basically trying to align that with a financial plan to support those. What came with that, though, was a lot of paperwork, and I'm just really not very good when it comes to admin. So there was lots of late nights of report writing, regulation, compliance, but more from a toxic culture point of view. It was a very male-driven industry at that time, and I just didn't feel comfortable. I tried to find my feet in various roles. So I worked for this life insurance company for a period. Then I moved into a bank because I thought, well, maybe I'll just deal with all the old ladies that have got way too much money on deposit and I can help them put it away somewhere, you know, to earn better money for them. And then I ended up working in more of a high net worth space with the British Medical Association. So I was working with doctors and surgeons to try and, you know, help them realize their financial goals. And then I just had enough of it, to be quite honest with you. And the story goes like this, because no one ever really wants to get into recruitment, right? So I went to see a recruiter and they thought I was an accountant because they hadn't read my bloody resume. And then they said, well, you've got all the elements of, you know, interviewing and giving advice. Have you ever thought about doing recruitment? And instead of selling a product, which I then had to do lots of report writing over and obviously, you know, would be taking clips of their premiums as commission, which I felt a bit unethical about. Instead, you just sell people and you get paid for selling people. In a highly unregulated industry with quite a substantial fee for that, you know, very, very rewarding work in terms of finding the right person for a role. And that's how I fell into recruitment.
Wow, that's an interesting path. This is like a little bit of a leading question because I feel like I know the answer, but maybe I'm going to be completely wrong and you'll surprise me. Is that what's the connection between what you liked, or if anything, that you liked about what you were doing in financial planning outside of all the things you said you didn't like, but what was the connection about some of the parts that you did like between that and then recruitment? What was the linking thing?
The correlation. So let's talk about this. Realistically, very long hours, they were the same because I was, you know, I was speaking to people in the evening.
You like the long hours?
Well, I didn't necessarily like it, but I certainly did them because, you know, work hard in your 20s, not so much in your 40s. So yeah, there were still long hours. I was having to speak to people outside of their workday about roles that they might be interested in. I was making time to meet people during the day. This was often face to face back then as well. We didn't necessarily rely on video technology so much then. So I was still interviewing people. I was trying to understand their aspirations and their goals. I was obviously in a position where I could help them match whether that company was right for them or that position or that team. And I guess this is where I started rounding out my career coaching advice. You know, I was mentored by a fantastic woman in the industry as well. So there was the leaning away from being in a male-dominated industry to being more guided and shaped by a very successful woman. And in that company, in that first year that I did recruitment, I won what they call like the fast tracker of the year, you know. And
good
it just
on
meant
yourself.
That, I know, like, I guess
good
just,
on
I'm,
you.
I'm proud of these little things, right? Because I'm all in. When I do something, I'm all in. And so you know, to come away from an industry where I thought I would become a financial planner and that would be my gig, right? And to then go, actually, no, now I'm pivoting. And the pivots kept happening years later, but we wouldn't have known that at 23, 24. But yeah, I'm all in. And I just gave it my all. And then there was a situation probably about 18 months to 2 years in, I was starting to lead, you know, I was starting to have people working with and for me. So I was just naturally progressing in that space. But then there was an economical dip in the UK. And so I asked and put my hand up if I could go on sabbatical and take myself out of the risk in those days of redundancy and just basically came to Australia for 9 months. And that was back in 2002. So being in Australia for 9 months, I still had a job in the UK to go back to, hopefully, if the economy picked up, which it did. But then that was my entree into falling in love with this country.
Aww. And you haven't left. And what is it you like about Australia? Or Australians?
Let's start with Australia.
Oh, come on.
I think...
I'm not actually representing Australians. I'm just curious. I am the mouthpiece of Australians.
I am not setting myself up to fall here. So basically, I think it was just that lightened attitude, obviously, because it's so much warmer and brighter and sunnier. I think people are naturally of that more sunny disposition. You know, not to be cliche about it, but, you know, the UK can be pretty grey and miserable. And I think that sometimes also aligns with some of the people. But they do also have cracking summers and great festivals. So, you know, I do have fond memories. But to me, it was just exploring this amazing land. I probably have seen in some cases a lot more of Australia than Australians have, because I wasn't a backpacker. I called myself a car packer because I arrived, I brought a Toyota Camry in Wollongong and then basically drove around the country for 9 months, exploring. Yeah, it was amazing. I had a really great time. And then when I got back to the UK, I picked up my role. I had a small team and I just would daydream and think of all the things that I'd seen, experienced, and I just felt ripped off being back in the UK. So my partner at the time was like, you know, we need to buckle down and like get on with our careers. We were 26, 27 at that point. And I'm not very good at taking instructions like that. So instead I was actually applying for jobs online in Australia. And I remember having a conversation with somebody who said, look, if you're serious about having your career as a recruiter, because, you know, it's English recruiters are popular in Australia and Aussie ones are popular in the UK, they said, you need to come over here. You need to come over and meet people and show that you're invested in actually emigrating. So I fibbed and told my current employer I was going to Egypt for a week. Ooh. Because I'd been to Egypt. So I felt that I could kind of hold that little white lie. And I flew to Sydney for a week and I had about...
Funny eight. That you thought that it would be more acceptable to say Egypt than Australia.
Well, I didn't want them to know that I was looking to leave. So I just told them I was going on holiday. And in fact, I actually then... And can imagine that in social media days where you're like checking in at the airport. I mean, there's none of that then.
There was none of that.
So I was able to go literally underground and flew 24 hours to the other side of the world. I had, I think, 6 days on the ground in Sydney, had about 8 to 10 job interviews. I was jet lagged and I came away with 3 job offers.
Ah, there you go. And then how long after that was it that you end up actually staying or coming back?
I interviewed in the week of Melbourne Cup. So what's that? Beginning of November. Is that, yeah, beginning of November? Melbourne Cup.
Yeah.
Mm. And I can tell you that because one person that was supposed to interview me stood me up because they were hungover from the Melbourne Cup the next day. So I do remember that. I forgave them because I ended up working with them. And so that was November. And then when I got back, I negotiated my contract, my visa. Obviously, my partner was along for the ride as well. And we sold our house and we landed in Australia on February the 14th, 2004, Valentine's Day.
Oh, 2004. Oh, so you have been here. Yeah. Isn't that funny? I've said this before on the podcast, but it's probably the only time that I end up having like more conversations where people are talking about dates and what they've done. So it ends up becoming more, and I keep on catching myself going, and when someone says things like that, I'm going, it's like 20 years ago.
20 years ago, man. But the significant piece was arriving. So every Valentine's Day, I'm single now, but every Valentine's Day, I fall back in love with this country because, you know, aww, it's my anniversary of being here. And yeah, I think, you know, I'm really grateful, I guess. Well, for a couple of things, I'm grateful for the fact that as a child, I moved around a lot. So I really was very open to change. I can walk into a new employer, walk into a new school like I did 7 times, you know. And I'm grateful for that change piece being built into me by my family. But I'm also grateful that this country was open to receiving me. And then in that 20 years now that I've built a significant network of people, an army, if you like, my dad was in the army, an army of people who, you know, support and back me, which is great.
Yeah. And we continue to support you like you're on the podcast.
This is home. This is home.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is. It's a great, I often reflect upon the fact that I feel by having good networks and sort of, networking groups that where then also you can speak with like new people then too, like you can build, you know, and sort of forge strong relationships with people you already know, but then make new ones, like meeting you, for example, like we only met once previously and you're like, I would have been on a podcast, and I was like, well, Sal, I happen to have a podcast, and you were like, right.
But that's because we had a connection as well, right? Because we were both curious about what each other did. And we're obviously in the right environment for that too. I guess the other part that I will pivot a little bit here. So then moving into the coaching space and sales director, I've been in the selling space in Brisbane, particularly since 2015, which is 9 years. If I look at what happened last year where my role was made redundant again, and that's really important, those words, role was made redundant. I was never made redundant because I'm highly marketable, right? So and that's what I teach people as well. I had to create a portfolio career that was not going to be at economic risk. So how I explain that is by being one of a handful of coaches that look after the defense contract, people are always leaving Army, Air Force, Navy, right? So I have a flow of candidates coming through that's never going to be challenged by the economy that we're experiencing right now. Also, by those being made redundant, I'm coaching them to getting new roles. So when people are made redundant, I'm one of the coaches that they can choose to work with. So though I guess that's like almost like bookends of trying to protect my income. And as I mentioned, I'm single, a solo mom. My children are giants. They're in their teens. So you can imagine they eat me out of house and home when they are with me. And so I needed to protect that level of income that was not going to be economically at risk. Then on the flip side, instead of working for another company doing a sales director role, which I felt really inauthentic about, you know, I'm protective of my brand. It's like, what's Sal doing now? Or she's now selling this. I decided to sell myself. And, you know, that's the bit that kind of is in peaks and troughs. You know, I've represented this year so far a leadership program, a mental health training, some digital literacy training, you know, and I've been taking this information to the market, and that results in them making new customers or gaining new clients. Then the speaking and the workshop piece is, that's a bit more volatile because I'm sure you experience this as well. Lots of businesses do want to have people speaking, but they don't necessarily want to pay you. So I'm more likely to say no to that rather than yes, because I want to value my time. So that's kind of up and down. But I did say earlier I'd allude to another business strand that I have since developed this year.
Yes, please elaborate.
Which comes again back to connection. So I'm just about to embark on my training as a funeral celebrant, which when I tell people that, I think their first impression is they put themselves into that space and go, oh, I could never do that.
Yeah.
But then they say, oh my gosh, you'd be so good at that. Because they can see that obviously as a facilitator, as a speaker, as someone that goes out and presents, I'd be quite capable of hosting and holding space for a family and a bereaved person. And where this came from, it's an unfortunate set of circumstances, but it's one that, again, if we look for the gift that comes out of these things, I lost both my parents within 6 months of each other in 2018. So I've already delivered two of the hardest funerals of my life. And it was only with my best friend losing a family member last year where it kind of got my, I guess, my cogs turning to think, well, when someone passes and you, if they have a funeral that requires a celebrant, because not everyone does, you know, there's different types of funerals out there. Really, it's like holding a workshop. You know, you have some introductory music. You might well read a poem and you're holding space for a vast array of people. Obviously, they're very sad. But can I hold that space for people for an hour while they're saying, you know, their goodbyes to a very dear loved one? And well, ask me in about 3 weeks how I'm going with that.
I'll put it in my calendar.
But that's almost, if you think about it now, with the, that's amazing. You know, the coaching business and then also then this business, the bit in the middle is what I enjoy doing in terms of connecting people and information to my network. But the reality is I'm actually preserving my income because people always need coaching and career coaching. And sadly, people are always moving off from this earth.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, once again, the more I'm thinking about it as you're speaking, I'm actually thinking, I'm reflecting, I guess, on, because I've had to speak at, I mean, funerals and things, and it's like, it's a terribly hard thing to do, you know, and especially when it's someone from your own family. But
yes,
there's a certain, you know, I guess there's a certain practicality, but also then like you bringing a certain set of skills around already being like, you know, very good at connecting people. You're very good too, which I, you know, found like straight away. It was like super obvious to me. You're, you know, very relatable immediately, you know, really super friendly. I mean, very nice to talk to. I mean, that doesn't sound, you know, like anything sort of mind blowing, but I think it's incredibly important. Like, say in that context, if you're going to be a funeral celebrant, where it's a very emotionally charged sort of thing, to have that mix, which, you know, from my perspective, you sort of seem to have that mix of being able to, like you were saying before, like a workshop, of holding a room, having a structure for it, and then also being able to inject just, you know, the right amount of sort of empathy, but having the power of like a third party is good there because, you know, it's and then I guess too, part of it is weaving in like a nice, you know, being able to tell that person's story, which in a weird, like, it's not that it's like there, you know, if you want to talk about, you know, the connection between brand and story and these things that I'm sort of trying to piece together as we're talking about this actual connection through everything is interesting to me because I often see patterns in things. That's where like I feel one of my, you know, core skills, like the things that underlie other like actual skills that you do every day is like seeing patterns and things, and that flows through to visual things, but also, you know, thinking about things too. And I can see these patterns kind of emerging or that link between these things we're talking about. There's like you're this mix of the good and right in the right situation because you've got enough skill and practice and consistency, I guess, through doing it over the years of going this mix of empathy and holding it in a professional, orderly sort of way. And it's fun. And it's...
Well, I think... And thank you for the observations from our one interaction many months ago. I'd like to think that I...
You did stay with me, to be honest. I actually did.
Thank you. I think there's a warmth. There's a genuine interest in other people. I think what I'm going to... What's going to be the challenge for me, and it's really fresh talking about this, right, because I literally enrolled at the end of June. I took advantage of the end of
financial
sale, right? So I've had the idea bubbling around for a little while, but I've actually just now put my money where my mouth is, so to speak. And the difference that's going to be different for me here is I am not going to be able to address this business as a corporate person. I can't go in with all my corporate nature because that's who I am. That's ultimately who I am. I'm going to have to soften those edges. and really think about how I approach this business and this brand with empathy, as you say, and that relatedness. I'm not always going to be that jolly sense of humor person. I'm going to have to hold space differently for different people. But here's the theme. It's about connection. So whether I'm interviewing the family, how do you want this person to be remembered? What do you want to take away on that day? How do you want me to be? What do you want? What do you want to be most memorable? You know,
I think being curious. Yeah, I think being curious there is then super important, because like you really, really want to, because I'm just as you're talking about, I'm going, oh man, like how would I, that sounds like a really challenging thing. Like if I was to be what you're doing, I would really want to, it'd be uppermost in my mind to understand, like to really get an understanding as much as I can from the family of who this person was, and to be able to tell their story in a way that is really sympathetic, and also, you know, with a you know, in an orderly way too, because you're helping to present this to that audience and for them to have this nice and reflective moment to reflect upon, you know, who they were, right?
You know, and you know what? Here's the real thing. Grief is just love. It's just it's loving someone that's passed. And so what you're almost doing in that moment, or what I will have the privilege of doing in that moment, is guiding someone through their grief journey.
Right,
so they're going to be terribly upset on arrival. They're going to be seeing people that they may not have seen for years. You're bringing people out the woodwork to say goodbye to a certain somebody, you know, all of those things. But then ultimately, in a structured way, whatever that looks like, taking them through to when they then go off, you know, whether they're going off to a club or a pub or whatever that looks like for often the wake, that's when your celebrant sort of leaves you to it, you know. But to be able to hold that space with people will be such a privilege. And I do see, again, the theme around connection. The connection is to me. And so, you know, for me to deliver, I think I said my father was in the forces, so I delivered a very military funeral for Dad. And with Mum, who passed then 6 months later, it was a very different experience. She was actually an artist as a hobby. And so we auctioned off all of her artwork to raise money for the British Heart Foundation. She died of heart failure. Yeah, it was just different. And it was that's warm. Really, and it was, you know, it wasn't, I don't mean to make to dismiss this feeling, but it wasn't terribly sad. It was actually quite joyful. Now, obviously, I'll be led by a family as to what they want to do. But so the hard bit for me, which is getting my head around, I've got to obviously do the learning around the etiquette and what that looks like to be a funeral celebrant. But then actually, what's that brand look like? Because it's probably very different to the corporate brand, Sal.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's – and then that ties back into, you know, to things that you have spoken to people about, you know, where that brand visibility – you know, for yourself then too, like you'll be going through a new brand journey, you know, through a new variant, like a variant like Sal V, like 4.5 or whatever it's going to be, you know, like this variant on who you are. It's still you, like it's still the core you, but you're going, like you seem to be from everything you've said, like you're used to change and you kind of embrace it because you had a lot of practice early on, which has obviously held you in good stead to be able to go, it's no big deal. Like you just got to sort of pivot and go. I mean, it's not meaning to sound dismissive of how hard change can be, because it's hard, but it's like whether you go hard is bad or hard is like, oh wow, that's interesting, and I'm gonna embrace it, which is like I like that when it comes to the most obvious example for me, which is I've often talked about this with my wife, how when I play sort of squash, because I like playing squash and I always bring it up because I'm a squash nerd and I'm always trying to push squash. Sorry everyone, you know, for all the squash talk. But how things like that in like whatever 30, 45 minutes or an hour is like a little microcosm of life, because it's like a concentrated view of a bunch of stuff that happens all the time. So there's highs and lows, and there's a lot of mental challenges, and things are happening very quickly, and then it's over. But because it's in this concentrated form, for me anyway, I often reflect on it because you go, oh, what did I do right and wrong? And it's easy because it's in this little concentrated form. But I've often gone, oh, that's just like, it's like the patterns thing again, is I've gone, oh, that's just like when I've had this challenge. And then somehow I've been able to resolve it easier, or it's been highlighted more in this concentrated form. And it's helped me actually in when I think about it, because I've just been thinking about it in terms of the game, like, or that person I'm playing against. But when it comes to then, I've gone, oh, that's easy. I can apply that, like, in a particular way. And that comes down to, you know, as that I'm sort of segue from what we're talking about in terms of being able to pivot and go apply this skill set that's in a seemingly unrelated area, you know, it's in this, but I'm going to do this now. So how do I just go and like tweak it a little bit? Or and how do
it was a light bulb moment for me, because my girlfriend sent me the run sheet for her family member's funeral. And I was just reading it to obviously support her, and I was curious to see what was being delivered, if you like. And as I was reading it, I was going, I could do that. So it was really, you know, there's two gifts out of this, because I was able to support my best friend with her grief journey, losing a family member, because I'd gone through it firsthand, you know, 6 years ago. But then equally, look at the gift that came out of all of those people passing, is it's given me an opportunity to look at something very different career-wise. Yet, as you say, there's links to other parts of what I do. I guess I'm thinking also, because I am an emotional person, I'm a feeler. Obviously being a people person, you'd expect that. And I think one of the things that I will need to be mindful of is how I manage my own emotions, how I don't take on other people's stuff. You know, when I think about if I watch a film, you know, and I see people crying, like, am I thick-skinned enough to be able to still continue and soldier on and deliver a good service? So all those things are going to take practice. But I was saying this to a friend the other day, it's not like I'm starting from ground zero here. My first funeral, once trained, will be my third funeral. So I feel like it's not something that's terribly new, because I've done it. I just happen to have done it for my mother and my father.
Interesting. It's interesting, because it's weird, is that, like you were saying, like, how do you then, like, it'll be more than just, because it's a different sort of thing, it'll be more than just like a job, because it's emotionally charged. But like, how do you then manage like your own feelings whilst it's it's not like standing up in front of a group of corporate people. It's like another thing altogether.
I reckon that's actually harder. Sometimes standing up in front of a group of corporate people that are judging what you're wearing, what you're saying, your weird posy accent. It's not Pommy, it's not Aussie. It's, you know, am I an authority? You know, and you get all this imposter syndrome coming up. But I think in the funeral setting, it would be very different. Now let's just pivot here. Okay. Let's just forget the sympathetic side of it for a moment. Now the sales director in me is like, okay, so how do I get my clients? Who do I need to be talking with? And now I'm lifting up the recipe for all of the other sales coaching that I do to then bring that into my space. Okay. So
what's your RevGen model for the funeral industry?
I do have a plan, and it does involve partnering. I think there's a lot of partnering that you need to be doing, because obviously there's a lot of facilities that are open to people that are about to depart. It just feels so clinical talking about it like this, Saul.
Yeah,
seriously.
It is, but like, you can't. I'm like, if you know, because I'm as you're saying, I was like, wow, that's quite a challenge, because you've got this but really interesting. Like, I was like, oh wow, that'd be so hard. And it would be. I mean, that's not me, but when I'm thinking about it, I'm like, yeah, you're going to have that point where people, it's like when people come to you, like your potential client, they aren't in any particular mindset about business, I have to find, you know, mm-hmm. a supplier for this, you know, job. It's all emotional.
It's going to be relationships. It's definitely going to be relationships. And I think the other factor to this as well, if you come back to Sal's business model, you know, we've got the coaching that happens. And on the other side of this bookmark, we've then got people that, you know, die every day. The reality is from an operating week point of view, I can reserve, say, Tuesdays and Thursdays for funerals. I can still free up my weekend to spend with my children when I do, you know. Mm. So there's almost there's that protection piece as well, because I could deliver two or three funerals in a day. There's definitely space for that. And then from a revenue perspective, they obviously pay a fee for that celebrant to do it. Mm. Now you're doing pre-work similarly to all the other stuff I've done in my career. You're doing a fact find. You're finding out what you need to do. You're presenting and preparing a run sheet, if you like, of what the day will look like. You're getting that signed off by the family. You're delivering it. And then hopefully you're saying, how did I go? And how are you now? And did that go to your, you know, to your plan? And then there you are, you're off again, doing it again. So I'm excited to see where this is going to take me. And having now said it out loud to you, I now feel like I'm like.
And to the world. and to the world. Remember, it's not like social media where only you and I are talking. Mm-hmm. Remember?
Yeah. No, I'm happy with that. I've been talking about it to my friends a lot. And I have actually recently sent a couple of messages. I took a picture of my enrollment screen and I sent it to a couple of people and they're like, yes, she's doing it. Good stuff. So, yeah, I've got a good crowd of people cheering me on. I know. And the other thing is as well, right? So we think about how many coaches and consultants in the leadership space there are, right? And hopefully, you know, I'm one of those good ones out there too. But how many funeral celebrants do you know? Well, now you know one.
Yeah, I know. I know a Buddhist marriage celebrant. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, and I knew one other marriage celebrant, but yeah, I don't know any funerals. Like I obviously know there have been because I went to one where there was like somebody, it was like a huge funeral, biggest funeral I've ever been to, a lady that was in, that I knew, she was an architect and she had an amazing funeral and was like, so couldn't believe how many people were there. It was incredible. And they had family speaking too, but they had it appeared anyway, like a proper celebrant who was facilitating.
Facilitator. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like the at speaking events, like the person who facilitates.
MC.
MC. Yeah, it was like the MC of
the master of ceremonies.
Yeah, master of ceremonies. Have you been master of ceremony before? Or have you just been speaker?
I have been an MC once. I was in New Zealand. This is what I was saying. I haven't seen you because I've been running around the country and over to New Zealand. I went to a friend's wedding recently in New Zealand and she did ask me to get involved. And I said, I just really want to celebrate you. I don't want the responsibility of doing anything like that. But I did do a reading of a poem during her ceremony. So that was privilege again. And, you know, everybody at the end was saying, you know, how beautiful it was, not only, I guess, to be delivering that for a friend. But yeah. And do you know what? It wasn't exactly a short piece. This was like an A4 piece of paper long poem. I was like, you really did set me up here.
In 8-point type.
It was just, there was a lot of words. And anyway, fortunately, I'd only had one glass of bubbles by that point, because had it been back at the ceremony, it was all, you know, there was nothing going to be happening after that.
Yeah, the page would have started to get a little bit blurry. But have you thought of, or have you done, or have you thought of writing? Like in any sort of writing? Are you that sort of person? Like who?
I do.
I don't know why I said that, but I just had a little
feeling.
You know, don't worry. I don't know anything secret about you regarding that. But I did have a little bit of a sense that you'd probably be like a good writer, that you've got that in you. Like
we said we were going to take this down various twists and turns. You're definitely going down a twist now, right? So my writing from a career and corporate point of view has always been supported by a journalist, because I've been the content and they've then created the article. So that's been, you know, over many years, many, many pieces featured. But that's obviously very career related or business related. From a personal perspective, I like to write personally, and, you know, we will refer probably more to it as journaling. And I've been writing in journals for, gosh, I'd say probably close to 10 years. And I specifically do this around the full moon, because if we look at it, if we look at it in a goal setting point of view, you know, it's a once a month exercise. I look at what my month has achieved. I look back and reflect, but then I also look at what I want to happen in the following month. So that's what I do on a monthly basis. In the corporate sense, you could say it's goal setting and reflecting. If people just don't like the witchy poo side of it, from mine, which is a bit more witchy poo, I like to think that I reflect and also then manifest what I want to happen in my life.
Yeah, it's a cycle though, but you do, you probably know this already, but it's sort of something that's actually like that whole idea of you're doing things at the full moon or new moon is like culturally important for a lot of cultures. It's also what a lot of farmers throughout, you know, history have done is to plant new things at that cycle too, because there's obviously something to it. Whatever it is, whatever angle you want to put on it, there's good right energy or whatever cycle. But it's also just a helpful, just on the intellectual side, it's helpful to go to have that time frame to go, you're doing this and you're planning for this. That's just helpful too.
What I would say on that is, having gone through my own grief journey 6 years ago, I was in a pretty dark space for a while there. And, you know, to lose both your parents in the same year, I had no words, and I had to take a career break, and I really had to dig deep to start moving through that grief journey. And, even months after, years after, I still wouldn't have been able to talk like this without probably having my bottom lip wobble and my throat thicken, but it gets easier, right? I mean, it's also acknowledging that grief is just love. But the reason I reference the darkness is I'd have these rituals where, you know, I'd go and watch the sunrise because I'd see a new day. Seeing another new day, a beautiful ball of energy coming out of the ocean. I live on the north side of Brisbane, so I often watch it coming out of the ocean. And then on the flip side of that, I also see the full moon, which is, even though as dark as it gets, there's still a big ball of light in the sky. Mm. And, you know, that's also supported me. I said to people last year, you know, when I was had my role made redundant again, I was just like, oh, here I am again. You know, what am I going to do now? What am I going to do when I grow up? And, you know, my rituals still saved me. So I would still get up. I'd go and watch the sunrise. You know, where you're a cult squash player, I'm a cult CrossFitter. And so I'd go to the gym, I'd be amongst my people. My people would change my mood. They'd lift me energetically. I'd keep showing up at the gym. I might go and watch the sunrise after the gym, depending on what time of the year it was. But those rituals, those habits, and to be banging on about consistency and authenticity again, those things saved me. You know, they made me get up in the morning. They made me, you know, connect with my people. They made me progress. They made me reflect. They made me write. And whatever else was going on around me. And, you know, honestly, I didn't plan to run my own business again. It kind of just arrived around me. And I think that's partly because I was spending so much time manifesting. You know, when I made the decision that I was going to actually run my business again, I got a phone call about speaking at a Christmas networking event. So there's a speaker bit covered. I got a call saying, are you still coaching? Yep. And then I also got a call saying, hey, I know that you're not working at the moment. Would you be able to support me with some business development activities? And I'm like, there's my business model. Done. Yeah.
Fascinating. Yeah. I find that with all the talk that, I'm a part of these conversations all the time because I'm helping people with branding, and then they're speaking with a coach or they're speaking with their accountant, and, you know, it's always, there's always, and these conversations, rightfully so, about, you know, consistency and having a clear sort of message about what you do. So it's like really easy for people to understand. But then there's like certain things like what you're speaking about with your journey, where, you know, some of that is, you know, still all applies, but then there's a whole heap of things that don't apply, and you're actually good at a bunch of different things, but like it's become, you know, to me anyway, hopefully people listening to it's become like more apparent. There's the underlying skills that are the actual consistent thing. And you were saying at the start too, and I think it's quite true in your case that is like that connection sort of piece. Like that's that seems to be like the glue between all those things.
Yeah.
Like that's the cool, that's the standout thing. So then saying now, you know, all this way into the podcast at the start going, you know, I'm, before we started, I think you said something like, I'm a connector or sort of something like that. What did you say?
Corporate chatterbox.
Corporate chatterbox. That's right.
Corporate chatterbox in one arm. But no, I'm a connector of people, of information. But also that connection,
creating connections and that can have the potential to the person hearing for the first time to go, what does that mean? Like, what does that, you know, what does that mean? Are you a professional? But now we know, like people who've been listening to this podcast, that makes a lot of sense.
Like, and even with my coaching, you know, if I'm coaching somebody, because I am lucky enough to have such a vast network in the C-suite space in corporate Australia, both in Sydney and Brisbane, not so much Melbourne. But if I'm working with somebody, I'm really in a position not only where I can shape their career coaching journey, but I can also actually plug them into, I can say to a HR manager of a company, hey, this person's expressed an interest in working with you. Would you take a look at their resume? And I just connect them. Now, what I will say is there's not many coaches out there that also have that capability, but that capability comes because I've been selling to that audience for 20 years. You know?
Yeah, yeah. There's all the other stuff that to the person first meeting you, or you know, who doesn't know that, you know, who isn't, you know, aware that you've got this other. So now that we've covered that you have a range of different skills, you're starting something very interesting new, and you've got a secret desire to be an author. No, just kidding. I think like that sort of stuff too for me, that it makes it really clear there's a very strong sort of sense outside of being curious. I find curiosity is often very linked to creativity. And I'm not necessarily speaking about like, you know, not in the sense of like, oh, you're a good like visual artist or sort of whatever that a lot of people gravitate to straight away. That's a manifestation of it, but creative thinking about things and about like problem solving, which like my sister had been in recruitment for Yonk. She was like a really kind of like high performing recruitment person, and she's now in sort of a more stable like HR role. But she's when she would talk to me about that too, the thing that really jumped out to me was, man, there would be a lot of creative problem solving in that, in you know, having an applicant and matching that. And you know, I know there's a bunch of things that you tick off, but that still there would be a lot of problem solving.
Yeah, it's almost you've got to be consultative to both the client and then also the candidate, because you need to influence the client to take a person, but you need to influence the person to look at that role. So there's lots of influencing and persuasive skills.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. And it just gets back to then, you know, I guess a willingness and then curiosity, because curiosity is also then linked to having just a willingness to do it, which is to me like is a bit of a foundational thing for stuff generally, to be willing to go to either like jump forward like you're doing now, but it's also linked to curiosity to like, oh, I wonder if, like, you know.
It's interesting you talk about the creative angle from a problem-solving point of view, because, you know, yes, I'm creative in terms of, you know, as a mum with my kids, you know, playful and painting and all of those sort of things, the true creative word. But if you were to ask people, and I coach my clients on this, is how would other people describe you? The creativity piece for me would be around ideation. I don't like saying innovation now. I think it's really overdone, but that ideation, how to approach things differently, how to maybe come up with a different way of doing something. I've been heavily involved in there's an innovation group actually in the Moreton Bay region. I've been heavily involved in that in the last couple of months because I love just being around these people that vibrate differently because they've got all these ideas. You know, it can feel a little bit stale sometimes in the corporate space that has structure and rigor and, you know, whereas in the startup and scale up land, it's a lot more exciting, as I know.
Yeah. I mean, that's, like story of my life. Yeah, is that like sometimes it's very tiring because there's a lot of, you know, especially some days when there's a lot of ideas that you're, you know, thinking of the, but the thing about that whole piece too is that I feel to do it really well, you have to be, whilst you might not necessarily like the failing part of it, but you like, you really like, honestly, you have to be completely okay to a degree with failing consistently on little points, because that's the only way you get to like the actual point that is the good one, or the next step to go to the next step, is you've got to be okay with going, you know, putting ideas out there that are in the mix. You know, some are good, some are bad, all initially are neither, you know, all are out there.
It's almost like there's iterations, isn't there, of your life, and iterations of both you personally and professionally. And, you know, it's those, it's those versions of yourself that are, one, you again, that authenticity piece. There might be vulnerability if you're going through a bit of a bad time, sad time. It's the people that you have around you. You know, they're also part of your brand. They say their statements for you in terms of propping you up during, you know, times where you might need some support. And that's both, again, professionally as well. You know, if you need to reach out to someone and say, hey, I need your help, I'm looking for work, then who are you reaching out to? If you're not showing up into places, then your network is going to actually be quite small. You talk about the writing. You just reminded me one article that I regurgitate probably every year because I'm reminded about it in some shape or form is I wrote an article on LinkedIn called The Plus One Philosophy. And it was because people, I knew that people had this nervousness. This is even pre-pandemic. I think I probably penned this back in like 2011, 12. And it's almost saying, if you and I agree that you're going to go to this event, I'm going to actually come with you because that's I'm being your plus one. Okay. I'm more likely to show up because I don't want to let you down. I'm more likely to show up because I feel like there's safety in numbers, and I'm just generally more likely to show up. So this plus one philosophy, I share this article again on LinkedIn every now and again, just to remind people, and particularly now, I don't know about you, Saul, but post pandemic, people have forgotten how to show up at events in real life, you know?
Yeah.
And so now if we're in a position to show up and actually create our network, and that could also be trying a new sport, we can lift this to other things. Like, you know, I just had one of my friends join CrossFit with me, and I've shown up for her on her class time so that she's enjoying it, and we're having that, you know, camaraderie and competitiveness to it. But that could also be a work event, right? So the plus one is about having your tribe, you know, as people refer to it as their tribe, their people of supporters, because at some point, excuse the potty mouth, when the shit hits the fan, you need to draw on people's strength. And if you don't have 100%. Those networks and support groups around you, that's a very lonely, isolating space to be in.
It's actually, I'm funny you should say that, because that's one of the key reasons I was in BNI for many years up until just sort of recently, but I still have a lot of friends and clients in my sort of network in there. But one of the things I used to always say, and I feel the same way about other networking groups too, is one of the key reasons that I always kept going was, yeah, outside of the obvious things of, you know, just trying to get work and blah, 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 and having a good network and all the things we've talked about, was that I always felt that it was like just weekly practice for a range of things. It was like keeping me sharp to just hearing how other people spoke about things. And I just generally found it really interesting, nice to be around other people. You know, you get to like see how other people speak about their own business and you pick things up. It was like weekly consistent practice that when I used to think about, and I still feel this way, I always felt like this is kind of the only time in my day or life where I get to experience this, where you're actually seeing a bunch of people at a glance stand up and, you know, put themselves out there. Like they're being, you know, they're putting themselves, they're sharing stuff, they're like trying, you know, and you're feeling like that kind of, you know, energy too, but you're also going, oh, that's interesting that they said that, or that's like me. And then it always still makes me feel, you know, the easiest way to say it is I would always feel comforted by it. Like I'm not the only one.
In the corporate space, I'm always hunting out events that I can go to, whether they're breakfast or evening events or whatever, because I'm not necessarily always interested in the speaker. I'm interested in the people that are going. What's that crowd drawing? On the small business front, you know, like the events that you and I met, and it's also the structure. Like you're actually interested in the way they host those events as well. And you're right, you're meeting different people. Like I said, being involved with this group in the Innovate region up here, you know, there's some amazing people that have some fabulous ideas. You know, you're hanging out with them, you're learning with them. Like I say, I just think I have a game of two halves here. I've got this sort of corporate structured, like speaker event type thing where I might go along, and then I've got these more intimate gatherings where, you know, you're able to converse more. They might be a lot smaller, but you certainly get a bit more airtime with people.
It's quite energizing though, really, isn't it?
Definitely.
I always find, and I mean, it's kind of the same in like probably a more intense way doing the podcast too, because this is the only time that I ever have, like in my, well, life that I can really think of where I have such long form, long conversations that cover a bunch of stuff. And I find that really interesting. And I don't think at the very beginning I quite thought about it like that, but I very quickly was like, oh, that's, I'd never do that anywhere else. Like you might have a long, like, a, you know, 10 minutes, maybe like half an hour, a bit longer, but even those conversations they're not as sort of specific. Mm-hmm. And so I find that interesting because it's just, you know, it's just in the mix it's fun. And it's also for me, from my own perspective, it's very educational because I get like this really interesting, wide perspective. And it's a sharp reminder of kind of how, not that I generally need to be reminded because I find people pretty interesting, but it's a reminder that like people have like pretty interesting stories. And like almost everybody does. It's always really different and really unique, and it's worth sort of sharing, really. And that's kind of why we're here.
But isn't it interesting? Like these conversations might well be reserved for a friend when you're going for a walk or something like that. You know, when you're investing that time into how are you? Let me tell you what's going on in my life. Let me tell you what's going on in my life. And even now, you know, the way that we are, I think we can be quite transactional. And I think this comes back to the whole point around connection as well. It's, you know, you can tell those people at those networking events, right, when they're a bit more transactional, they're not really invested in your story. They're waiting to talk rather than listen.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm a good judge of character. So I tend to sort of move along from those people. But instead of being transactional and in passing, hey, how are you? Actually, how are you? You know, and be really invested in that individual for that period of time. So that's having more connection again with them.
There's that word.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah. So as we're sort of on the tail end of the podcast, and I said at the start that we'd I would ask you, which I'm just about to. Your quote. So this is something I always do in the podcast. Something that you feel that you like or has any particular meaning. So what is it? What is it, Sol?
So, and I'll draw on where this is actually placed, but I'm reading it now. I define connection as the energy that exists between people when they feel seen, heard, and valued, when they can give and receive without judgment, and when they derive sustenance and strength from the relationship. Now, that is a Brené Brown quote. I absolutely adore her work. An amazing, amazing series of books and podcasts. And gosh, I could just, you know, hang off a lot of what she talks about. But what that means to me, and this is both in terms of personally and professionally, that connection, that give and take, that genuine interest in each other, is on a personal level as well as professional. And that's actually the introduction to my about section on LinkedIn, because I want people to know that connection is really important to me.
And it is. That's very, very clear. And actually, could you just say that quote again?
Sure. I define connection as the energy that exists between people when they feel seen, heard, and valued, when they can give and receive without judgment, and then they when they derive sustenance and strength from the relationship.
Mm, I like that very much. That's really nice. I don't think I've ever heard that before, but that's a great one. Mm. I really like
book,
that.
There's a book called Atlas of the Heart, which was a very timely read a couple of years ago. And, lots of beautiful statements in there. Very simple read.
Yeah, I think that's, it is surprising. I'm a bit of a sucker for especially animal stories, like where some I'm an absolute hopeless, when there's some story where there's a dog or a horse that didn't have a friend and it found another friend. And it's like really simple stories, but it's always these stories about, sort of, I guess like we're speaking about before about love, being sort of grief to these things that get to the heart of stuff in general. And there's something that everybody sort of relates to, but I'm especially seems to be amplified when it comes to animal stories for me. I saw one the other day. It was terrible. Oh, hello. Who's that?
So just for the podcast.
Yeah.
This man, little Bingo, has been absolutely dying to know who I'm talking to because he doesn't understand I'm talking to my computer, but he is just desperate to get some airtime with me.
And for those people, because this is a audio podcast, can you describe Bingo?
He's nuts. He's black and white. He's a Staffy Crossbull Terrier. He's medium size. He's really he's really curious, and he's very puppy-like still. He'll be three in November. But look at his wagometer, his tail.
That's hilarious.
So he's a little nutty like me. He's got a great personality, and he obviously wants to be connected to me right now.
That's so funny. But he's also there really patiently just like, what's going on? Excuse me.
Honestly saw that.
Oh, you're so cute.
Anyway, sorry to distract you.
No. All of that is really wonderful and tells a lot about you too. So on a practical note then too, like what's the best way for people now that they've listened to the podcast to find like a little bit more about you online? Yeah. Like where do they go? What's the best place?
So I'm currently building out an updated website, which is just a point of validation, to be honest, because people can more often than not, in a professional sense, find me on LinkedIn. So just by writing Sally Ann Blanchard, they can find me.
Yeah.
I keep myself a bit more private on social media, but I do have a Facebook page that is Sal Blanchard Speaker Connector Coach. That's the title. But people would more often than not be either seeing me around the traps or connect with me on LinkedIn.
Thank you. And thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's been very, very interesting. And like we were true to our word, weren't we, at the start? It did end up, which doesn't always happen, went down a range of different, very interesting paths. Yeah. So
thanks
for being, for the second time we've ever met.
Yeah, thanks. And well, let's make it a third soon, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And thanks everyone for listening to the podcast yet again. And we'll see you again soon. And say goodbye to everyone.
Thanks, Sally-Ann. Everyone. It's been really beautiful having this conversation with you today, Sol. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks everyone. See ya.
Cheerio. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Grow Your Business. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time here at the Grow Your Business Podcast.